welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. Today's podcast, we're going to be looking at the preseason. And before I get into talking about the preseason, I did forget to mention this is also brought to you by Basketball Monster, and it is brought to you today and for the next few months by a brand new sponsor, Moneyball.com.au, Australia's first daily fantasy sports site. So make sure you head across to Moneyball and sign up. And if you're going to do that, I'm going to put a link on my website. I'm going to have it on my Twitter as well. And I encourage you to use my link to help show that you're supporting the podcast. So the link, if you don't go and click it, you can type it in this way. It's bit.ly/redrockbball. Go ahead and click the link. We'll type that link in. Click it through the Twitter profile. Click it through the website, anywhere there, and go and sign up for Moneyball. And NFL games tomorrow, you can go and prepare yourself for NBA season to lose money against me by losing some money on the NFL. So go ahead and deposit some money and get yourself in, all you Australian and New Zealand people. Go ahead and join into the first daily fantasy site in the Southern Hemisphere. Now, to talk preseason, I am joined by Red Rock Fantasy Basketball stalwart and Moneyball writer, Matt Smith. Matt, how are you going?
I'm doing well, mate. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to have you. Good to have you on. And before we get into too much more, I just wanted to mention that you definitely heard the new intro music to the podcast. It's a song called Gender Queer by a band called Sex Karate, who is from a listener to the podcast. They sent that through. So I hope you guys do enjoy the show. I know people hate change. So when I said I was changing the podcast music, a lot of people were like, no, don't change it. But new season, time for something new. So Gender Queer by Sex Karate. So make sure you go on. Again, there'll be links for that on the website, and you can go and support their music, which I do highly encourage you to do. Now, Matty, where can everyone find you on Twitter?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @SmanSports. So fire your fantasy basketball questions away over there.
Yes, and Matt is also, he participated in an AMA on the Reddit Fantasy Basketball sub-forum today. And, of course, Matt, you are a founding member of All-Star 5.
I did. We had a really good range of questions again this morning on Reddit. Gave away a free All-Star 5 membership to one lucky contestant. And we might even do that again during the season. So, yeah, head over to All-Star 5, fire up your free 10-day trial, ask us your questions. And if you like what we're offering, there's a number of membership options there for you. So yeah, go and check out allstar5.com.
Definitely. Obviously, I'm a member of All-Star 5 as well, along with Seth Klein, Mark Roberts, and Joey Mamone. So you can go ahead and check that out too. Now, Matt, let's cut the promotional stuff. We've talked Moneyball, talked Basketball Monster, we've talked All-Star 5. Let's get into the preseason. And if you were to sum up the preseason in one word, how would you do it?
Fast.
Yep, that's fair enough.
We were just having a quick discussion. We don't like to speak too much about fantasy basketball before we start, because otherwise we're just rehashing it when we do go live. But we're just saying the pace and the points per game over the preseason has just been crazy. Just looking at some stats a minute ago, and there's actually 19 teams who are over 100 in terms of pace. Now, pace is the number of possessions a team uses per game. Last season there was one team, and that was the Golden State Warriors. This preseason, I know it's only a small sample size of 3, 4, 5 games, it's 19 out of the 30 teams who are over 100. So whether this is a trend that we're going to see throughout the season, everyone's just trying to copy the Golden State Warriors and what they did last season, but it's been nuts, some of the numbers that teams have been putting up.
Yeah, it's been crazy. You only have to watch one game and just see how quick the teams are moving up and down. And the thing that I think is key that you bring up there, Matt, is that there was one team that did it last year, and it was the Golden State Warriors. And which team won the title? It was the Golden State Warriors. So we know the professional sports is very mimicky. They like to copy whatever happened latest. The Warriors did it. The Warriors won. So every other team's going, you know what? We're going to do it. We're going to push the pace. And we're going to just jack threes like they're going out of crazy. And we're going to get through and talk about some teams in a bit more detail. But pretty much everybody can hit threes at the moment. The one guy who would have been really interesting to see tested out is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and we're not going to see him play, but everyone's throwing up threes. Brook Lopez is throwing them up, Al Horford is, Pau Gasol, DeMarcus Cousins, everyone's going out there and throwing up threes at pretty ridiculous rates. And the thing that I found from the start of the season is the guys who we expect to jack you know, 60% of their shots from threes aren't. Like, Ryan Anderson is not throwing up as many threes as what he has. Devin Booker, we thought he'd be a guy that would only shoot threes, and he's not shooting as much as he was. There's a few guys, because I went through and redid all the projections, or not redid, tweaked the Basketball Monster projections yesterday, just on some of the data we've got from preseason, not basing things off preseason, but just some ideas that are happening. And just the crazy amount of three-pointers and the pace and all this sort of stuff that's happening is, it's really, really interesting to see how it's going to play out in the season. Now, Matt, you wanted to start things off talking about my favorite team, the Chicago Bulls. What have you seen from the Bulls? I know that one of your boyfriends plays on that team. What have you liked from them in general?
Yeah, staying on the same trend, and that's three-pointers attempted. Last season, during the season, we know they've had a change of coach, gone from Tom Thibodeau to Fred Hoiberg. Hoiberg's brought in his up-tempo offense, or Hoiberg ball.
That's an awkward phrase. I don't care for that at all.
What, Berg ball?
No, I'll think of something. I'd go with Fred ball over either of those two, because Hoiberg just sounds, it's too awkward. It doesn't have a good mouth feel.
You love a good mouth feel.
I'm all about mouth feel.
That's not gender queer at all. Going back to
sex karate for everyone.
This is going to be a long show.
Yeah, I know.
The Chicago Bulls last season, they attempted 22.3 three-pointers a game, up the ante. This preseason, they're up to 30.4. They were above 32 or 33 prior to today, didn't throw up as many. But yeah, their one team in particular, just complete change in offensive tempo, whether it's Mirotić, Jimmy Butler, but Doug McDermott's been the big guy off the bench, just been not only attempting threes, but dropping them as well. So he's one player who's come sort of from nowhere. There's a few of those guys, we'll mention a few of them throughout the pod, but he's one of those guys who have come from nowhere with the Mike Dunleavy injury right into fantasy calculations, and now pretty much needs to be owned in 12-team leagues right at this moment.
Yep, I'd say he definitely has. Now, there's a massive chance he doesn't provide enough value in 12-team leagues after the first week. There's a huge chance that happens, but for what he's doing at the moment, Doug McDermott, he is averaging 17.8 points, exactly 3.5 threes and 5 rebounds. Now, he's a zero in steals, he's a zero in blocks, he doesn't give you assists, but points, threes, some okay rebounds, and some pretty good percentage. He has been on fire, and he's thriving in this system. Bobby Portis is another guy who's been crazy, crazy. Now, there's no chance you take Bobby Portis in a standard league, is there?
Standard league, no. He's getting very close. I can't wait until the season starts to see if he does jump over Taj Gibson in the rotation.
Yep. Well, Taj made his return today. Taj played his first game of the preseason, so he is back. Portis wasn't quite as effective today, but he's been incredible.
He's been amazing. Just his rebounding rate is like 1,000,000% or something.
But it's pretty high.
It's close. I can't wait to see what he's going to do. Yeah, hitting threes as well, like 4 three-pointers in 5 games.
Yep.
Hasn't missed a free throw for 4 games as well, getting some blocks. Yeah, like I said, his rebounding rate is through the roof. So if your league's sort of 180 players plus deep, I'd definitely be taking a flyer on Bobby Portis for the next 2 weeks just to see how the season does start out.
Yeah, look, I've got him projected at really low minutes, but we don't know if that's going to stick. We don't know what they're going to do. Everything is just pushing towards the Bulls making a trade of one of these big guys, and Gibson would have to be the first guy to go, and that would give more minutes there to Portis. But at this stage, it's very hard to envisage him getting 10 minutes a game. I can't see it with these other guys. But on the other hand, Nikola Mirotić, when I redid the Basketball Monster projections yesterday, I've got him at 30 minutes. Would you say that's conservative? Would you say it's aggressive? How would you say that those minutes pan out?
No, I really like it. What, just on those 30 minutes, what are your projection stats wise?
Well, that's the thing. They came out like out of control good. At 18 points, 2 threes, 7 rebounds, a steal, 0.9 blocks, almost 2 assists.
How many threes a game? So
2.1. Like that came out crazy, like crazy high. And then I went back and someone called me out for it, said, what's going on? Mirotić's numbers so high. And I went back and his per 36 numbers, they're actually less than what he was doing at the last half of last season. That's how.
Yeah. And if
he gets 30 minutes, it's flying.
if that's not top 50 value, I don't know what is.
It's beyond top 50 value. That's potential in a 9K league. That's we're talking top 30 value. And by no means do you draft him inside the top 30. You probably don't even draft him inside the top 50, because just by going on people's reaction to me projecting him at 30 minutes, no one buys it. No one goes, nah, there's no way he's starting. Everyone's still thinking, yeah, Gasol and Noah are taking the bulk of the minutes. They're not. They're not taking the bulk of the minutes. I've got Gasol at 31, Mirotic at 30, and Noah at 29 minutes. Pretty even spread. And Mirotic, if he gets those minutes, he's going to blow up. He could be the second best player on this team by the end of the season. That's not a stretch.
I think even 29 minutes for Noah might even be a bit of a stretch.
It could be high. Yeah, it could be high.
For me, he looks done. Like, I know he's going to. Well, he should be playing backup center off the bench, but like I said, Bobby Portis should be going past Gibson, and Bobby Portis is just about close to the third best big man at the moment. I just don't see where Noah can fit in.
No, and he played today. He did okay. He was pretty aggressive rebounding, but he's not going to score. And I don't know if that's going to fly in Hoiball, where the guy's just not going to be able to score or not even out there throwing up any shots. But Mirotić to me is a guy that, yeah, I'm riding it hard. Initially, I thought I didn't know where he was going to get the minutes, but everything over the last 3 months, he's going to get 30, 29 minutes. And even if he only gets 28 minutes, who cares? If you draft him at pick 70, that's still a significant upgrade in value from that pick. He has been really, really impressive, and the numbers come out super, super impressive. What's your take on Jimmy Butler? He's looked a little slow in preseason, or a little something.
Can I just say one thing on Mirotić before we go? So Yahoo have changed their rankings now. Mirotić, I believe, is at 54 ranking.
Yep.
So if you want him, you're going to have to go early, because he's going to be sitting at the top of the draft board, and people are going to go, oh yeah, Nikola Mirotić, he's going to break out. So how early are you going to go on him?
If that's the case, I didn't know he was quite at 54. Then that's the case. Then Yahoo, we're talking 12 team league standard. Then fourth round, get him before pick 48. End of the fourth round, I'm sort of okay with it, because I actually think that in that area there is room for him to get better than that. You are going to get hurt with field goal percentage most likely. He might not shoot as bad as he did last year, but he's not going to be a high volume field goal percentage guy. So you've got to take that into consideration. Now, whether I want to take him at that point, I don't know. If he slips outside the top 50, then I'm snapping him up, because as I said, all it takes is you be filled with a league of these people who don't buy into it and think he's going to be limited to 24 minutes, and then you can get him outside the top 50, then it's all over. But I think inside the top 50, it depends on the rest of my team.
So Mirotić, tossing guys around who can steal, block, and hit a three. Mirotić, Danny Green, Nicholas Batum. How do you rank him?
Well, I haven't redone my ranking since my latest projection, so I don't have it in front of me, but he's ahead of Danny Green to me.
Yep.
And Batum, he's pretty close. I'd have them both pretty similar. It just, do I want more assists? Do I want more rebounds? That's how I'd put those two guys. Like, what stat do I need? What haven't I got in the first three picks? And what stat do I need with my next one? Do I want six assists, or do I want seven or eight rebounds, or six or rebounds, or whatever he's going to give me? Like that's where I sort of look to which guy that I want there. But both of those guys, and Batum was a guy who came out looking really good in the new projections as well. I think that they're going to be really interesting players this season. They're two guys that I'm not necessarily high on, but well, yeah, I am. I think they're looking really good. But what's your take on Butler? I get a lot of flack for me having Butler, not ranked high at all. I've got him outside the top 20 in head-to-head leagues. He hasn't looked great so far. I don't know what it is. I know it's preseason, but he just hasn't looked great. I'm not reading huge amounts into that, but I don't know, something a little bit funny there.
Yeah, he's been below average, has been playing point guard, which he's fairly new to. I'm still pretty high on Jimmy Butler coming into the season. I think he's still got some room for improvement in terms of his assists and his three-point numbers. Taking on those extra ball handling responsibilities. He's come out during the off-season and said, he's a point guard. He's told Fred Hoiberg he's a point guard. So whether the time comes or when the time comes when Derek Rose, gets injured, they'll turn to Jimmy Butler as opposed to Aaron Brooks. So I still think he could get to maybe four assists a game, keep those 5-6 rebounds, keep his steal strong. We know he's very good, if not elite, from the free throw line. And once again, with the Bulls dropping all these 3-point attempts, I think he can go from 1.13s last season into the 1.5 range. His minutes are going to come back. He's not going to be playing 38 minutes a night, but
no.
The extra offensive tempo will help him, and I think that'll even things out. So I think during the playoffs last season, he was up around 2 3-pointers per game. So if he can keep that going and translate that into this season, I think he'd be really valuable. And I've said this before, he's one of those guys at the end of first round, early second round. Once your top nine come off the board after John Wall, to me it's sort of the Jimmy Butler, Rudy Gobert show. So yeah, I wouldn't hesitate to draft him inside that top 15 early on.
We'll talk about Gobert a little bit later on, but to me the Butler thing is weird for me for what he did last season. His per 36 scoring numbers jumped from 12 to 18.6. That's pretty much unheard of. You know, I've mentioned on this podcast before, you look at Tim Duncan's per 36 stats and they're basically the same every season. Jimmy Butler's numbers went through the roof. He had an extra rebound per 36, an extra over half an assist a game, an extra extra 6 points per game per 36. That sort of stuff doesn't happen. That's a huge leap. I don't expect him to take another sort of leap like that this season. I still think that he can be pretty good. He's not a guy that I want to grab at 12 in a head-to-head league. In Roto League, I'm a little bit more okay with it, but I'm not as big on it. And it also depends if you're playing with turnovers as well, because that is an impact. He's a very low turnover guy. He was only at 1.4 last year, and that gives him some extra value in that area. Anything else on the Bulls, Matt, that is worth mentioning? Pau Gasol taking threes, hitting around 1.5 threes a game.
Well, it seems like every big man in the league's taking and hitting threes, with Gasol, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, Al Horford, Chris Humphreys is hitting threes. Like, what's going on?
He's taking pretty much every shot as a three. Everyone is doing it. It is such a strange phenomenon. Now, whether it continues, I don't know, but it's worth paying attention. I think that it's going to translate somewhat. Now, they're not going to end up, like, these guys are taking 30, 40% of their shots from three, these big men. They're not going to do that, but I think they're going to be guys who never took threes last year into becoming players who can contribute in that area. And I think that to do a smooth transition into the Atlanta Hawks, I think Al Horford's going to be a guy who will actually attempt quite a lot of threes this season. What do you make of what we've seen from him so far?
Like I said, it's really hard to know whether this trend continues into the season. I'm probably more interested in Anthony Davis, who is at exactly 1.3 per game at the moment. What did you change his projections to?
I think he's at 0.3 threes a game.
Yeah.
I got Horford at 0.4. And that might be low for Horford.
Yeah, even that. If our Horford comes out and hits 30, 40 three-pointers across the season, that's just gravy. As long as if these guys are hitting threes, you still want them to be above 50% from the field. If they're all going to turn into Chris Bosh and Kevin Love and they're hitting 1.5 threes but their field goal percentage is at 46, then that's going to slide them down the draft boards and change a lot in terms of your efficiency and their value in terms of roto and head-to-head leagues.
What it's also going to do is it's going to change the benchmarks in head-to-head and roto leagues, though, because if these guys who are 50, 54% shooters on big volume come down and become 48, 49% shooters on big volume, then in that 48% mark, it's not going to be realistic because there's going to be five guys in the league who shoot that on enough volume to influence it. So you might find that get a good score in a roto league in that category, or to win that league in head-to-heads, you might only need to be 46.5 or 47. If all these big volume guys, Brooke Lopez, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, drop down 3 or 4% due to this, you'll find that changes benchmarks around the league as well. What else have we got for Atlanta? I don't think there's much really of note for this team in terms of fantasy perspective. We haven't seen anything great out of Dennis Schroeder, or nothing to make me think that he's any threat of taking any minutes away from Jeff Teague. Have you seen anything else from them?
No, nothing. Jeff Teague seems to be scoring a lot more early on in the preseason than facilitating. So once again, that might just be getting Kyle Korver back into it after his off-season surgeries. No Damari Carroll there, so they've still got that that weak link or that spot there up for grabs on the wing. I still like Jeff Teague coming into the season. He had 17 points, 19 points. He did have a 4-point game, but I still really like him as a solid point guard in that late second, early third round.
I love Jeff Teague as a player. I've been a huge Jeff Teague fan for a while. There's just always a nagging uncertainty with me, with Teague, with what they're going to do with this team. And do they move on to Schroeder at some point at the end of this season or whatever they do? But for now, Teague is still a very, very solid guy. He's a great field goal percentage. He's shooting over 50% from the field in the preseason. He's a guy who can approach that 48 to 49% from the field. Another guy from the Hawks who's taking a stack of threes is Mike Muscala. Now, we tend to anticipate that from him, but he's hit over a three a game in his two games. In his couple of games, he's only playing 14, 15 minutes. So he's jacking up threes like they're going out of fashion as well. What about the Charlotte Hornets?
Go ahead. Just quickly on Dennis Schroeder. He's averaging about 10 points in 17 minutes during the preseason. He had an awesome second half of last year after the All-Star break. I think he went 12-4 or 12-5 or something similar. But he's still one of these guys who's sitting around on waiver wires in even like 14-team leagues. For me, Dennis Schroeder really needs to be owned. I've got him in a couple of 12-team leagues already, and I think he's probably the latest round point guard that you can get that's really going to have some value, not only in his own right, but just in case anything does happen to Jeff Teague. And I've said this before, I think they'll have to play them both in the backcourt a fair bit. So
yeah, because the other guys are crap, let's be honest.
But Jeff Teague's the kind of guy who he doesn't need, you know, 28, 30 minutes to put up value. He can be like your Isaiah Thomas and come in and play 20 or 24 minutes and still put up some reasonable numbers.
Yeah, that's pretty reasonable. He's a must own in a 14-team league, absolutely no doubt in my mind. Let's move on to the Charlotte Hornets, who suffered the Michael Kidd-Gilchrist injury. We don't really know what they're going to do at shooting guard position yet. Is it going to be Jeremy Lamb? Is it going to be PJ Hairston? It's going to be one of those two. But the guy who gains the most value, and we said this from initially, it's Jeremy Lin, and he's looked really good. To me, he is a must-own player in all 10 and 12-team leagues at the moment, even if it's just you just add him into the last spot on your bench. But he's going to have a significant role. He's going to play minutes. He's going to score. He's going to hit threes. He's going to get steals. He's going to get assists. I really like Jeremy Lin at that in the last couple of rounds of a draft. What's your take on Lin?
Yeah, I'd still like to see how it works once the season started. He has had some good games, but he's been playing sort of that 25, 28 minutes, 17, 10, 16 points. So scoring there. I think Nicholas Batum's going to have a little bit of a bump in value, but I still think the minutes will be shared between Lin, Lamb and Hairston, Hairston to a lesser extent, but it might just be a case of matchups. You know, whoever gets hot on the night. So, to me, Jeremy Lin in the 10-team league, I'd probably stay away. In 12 teams, feels better.
Yeah, 10 might be a little bit aggressive, but a guy I want to be aggressive on is Nick Batum. I think that we heard Steve Clifford say that he wants Batum to be the first or second option. That has been sort of the way it's gone in preseason. Al Jefferson, apart from today's game, which he took a few shots, he was barely doing anything in the previous two games. He'd only averaged 6 points before today's games. Only taking 7 attempts from the field, like not a huge amount. It was Batum, it was Walker getting most of the shots. Batum is a guy that I think has a real bounce back. He's going to provide good rebounds, good assists, good threes. And that's another thing. The Hornets are taking so many threes this year. I think that the way we've got them projected is like an extra like 8 or 9 attempts based on what they did last year because they brought in all these 3-point shooters. Well, Batum's a guy who can shoot. Lamb's a guy who's going to jack it. Lin is going to shoot. Cody Zeller's now taking threes. Frank Kaminsky's there. Their whole team, Spencer Hawes, everyone's taking threes apart from Al Jefferson. Their whole team is going to start hitting threes and taking them, and that's not what they did last season. Cody Zeller, is he worth a late-round pick?
Not for me. There's just too many mouths to feed in that front court with Kaminsky there as well. Just wanted to go back to when you said that Batum's the first or second option on offense. I read that as well. So you take it that it's Kemba Walker and Batum, and now Al Jefferson, third option.
Yep. Al Jefferson's a big man who's over 30 and looked, before he got injured last year, looked rusty, looked like it was, and we know athletic peak for guys is about 27, 28. Once they pass that, they're on their downside of their career. Before he got injured, he was declining. He's a slow, plodding big man. He's great. We all love Al Jefferson. Yes, he's lost 20 pounds due to stopping fried chicken, but I don't think that that's going to be enough for him to get back to being a 20 and 10 guy. I still think he's great value around the middle rounds, but he's not a top 20 player anymore. And Batum and Walker are going to be the two main guys. But on Zeller, I'm all over taking him in the last couple of minutes. I think that Kaminsky's a rookie. I think that Zeller is going to get the bulk of the minutes there. I think he can push to 28 minutes, 29 minutes. It might not work out, but I'm okay with taking him. Anything else on Charlotte? What's your take on Jeremy Lamb? He's still a 12-team must-own guy or not?
Not at the moment. He's not. He's going to be a streaming option
yep.
for me. Well, who come in, give you that bump in scoring, and that's about all.
Who would you have rather have, Lamb, Lynn, or Levine?
I know Zach LaVine hasn't shown much.
He's been shit, really.
Yeah, well, if you want to put it bluntly, Josh. I'm still holding LaVine, still holding out some hope that he does turn it around. I'm probably going to hold him and give him a couple of weeks, give him a good crack at it to see if he can put up some numbers. If he can't, then I'll drop him. But yeah, I think he's got a little bit more value than Jeremy Lin right now.
I think that both of them, Lin and LaVine, both should be owned in 12-team leagues. If I'm choosing, I'm probably choosing Lin, but LaVine has been disappointed. I haven't seen what he did today. Did he do anything today? Oh, he played off the bench today, didn't he? He had 9 points in 25 minutes with 5 assists. And to be honest, I reckon that's a better role for him. I think that he's better off in a bench role, running some point, running some shooting guard a little bit there. I don't know. We'll see. But he's definitely worth holding on to. I'm not dropping him if I picked him up. And I still think he should be owned. But if I'm picking between the two, I'm picking Jeremy Lin. What's another team that stood out for you?
Just go back to the stats here. Houston, running and gunning. Yep. Let's talk about Philadelphia.
Okay.
With your boy Robert Covington. He's been another one who's just been dropping threes all over the place.
Did you see that the ESPN did a fantasy mock draft, and I think he went at pick 130 or something? Or somewhere crazy. Russell Westbrook went number 2 in that mock draft, by the way.
Hmm.
But Robert Covington is a top 60 player. There is no doubt in my mind. He is averaging almost 3 threes a game, over 6 rebounds, a block, 2 steals, 3 assists. Yes, the field goal percentage is going to be an issue, but it's an issue with so many guys. Field goal percentage punting is such a viable strategy this year because guys like him and Nikola Mirotic, I think if you punt field goals, I read today, in a 9-cat league, he's projected on Basketball Monster as the 13th best player if you punt field goals because you're getting 18 and 7, 2 threes, a steal, a block, and 80% free throws. Crazy, but and Covington's going to be the same. He is putting up super numbers. Isaiah Cannon is Isaiah Cannon a must-own player?
If he is, it's only going to be for the short term. We know yeah. Kendall
Marshall. I'll rephrase it. Is he a must-draft player?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm gonna say he's not. He had a fair crack at it last season, and his numbers were okay, but they weren't as good as what we thought or what we hoped.
But they were still ownable. They were ownable in 12-team leagues, even in 24 minutes, he was ownable.
So, but even if you draft him, I think you probably only get maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks at the most in terms of
that's fine.
Fantasy value.
I agree with that.
I'd rather shoot. Well, once again, depending what you're doing, if you want to, have that 3 weeks of value and get off to a hot start. Sure, if you're looking longer term, then he's not a great option. So just depends what you want to do. For me, he's not on my radar. I'd probably take a LaVine or a Rodney Hood or an Alec Burks, someone a bit more longer term.
You can treat one of your last two picks, I reckon, as like a waiver wire addition and grab a guy like a John Jenkins, a Justin Anderson, a Isaiah Cannon, a guy who's going to have value for the first month and then drop off. Because in all seriousness, most of those guys you pick, say two-thirds of the guy you pick in your last four picks, I know two-thirds of four doesn't really work out, but say three of the last four picks, you're probably going to have dropped them in the first month anyway for someone else. So I'm okay getting a guy like Cannon's averaging 2 threes, 14 points, 4.5 assists, 1.5 steals through his first 4 preseason games. If he gives you that through the start of the season, and there is literally, Scotty Wilbekin, is he taking minutes? TJ McConnell? Like, it's going to be Isaiah Cannon getting 30 minutes a night at point guard, unless Jakar Sampson, becomes point Jakar again. Cannon is going to get minutes, and that could be a big gain for you. Yes, he'll drop off when Kendall comes back and when your boy Tony Roden comes back, but I'm okay with using one of those last picks as basically a waiver wire addition, because if it happened a week into the season and you saw, geez, Isaiah Cannon's averaging 14 points, 5 assists, 2 threes, you would add him straight away and you would ride him out for that first month. So that's why I want to treat one of those last draft picks as that, look at this, it's the hot guy off the waiver wire. I'll add him for that first month and then deal with it later. But I understand your thought process of going for the future, but I want to use one of those as a waiver wire sort of spot.
Yeah, sure. And just on Robert Covington, he can do exactly what Trevor Ariza does, but he can get him 4 or 5 rounds later.
Now, you know what? If you're in a draft with me, you're not getting him that late. I've got them ranked pretty similarly. About, I reckon, from memory, like I said, I have to re-rank them based on the new projections I've done, but I reckon they're going to be 4 or 5 spots apart in that 50 to 60 range. If not 5 or 6 high, I reckon they're going to be pretty close. One interesting thing for me from the Sixers, another interesting thing, is Jahlil Okafor's percentages. If I told you Jahlil Okafor was shooting 80 and 39, which way do you think it would be?
Did you say shooting or shooting?
Both.
I don't know, you threw me then. What was he shooting? 80 and 49.
80 and 80 and 39.
Oh, 39. 39 be from the field then.
Yeah. But if you...
He's gone from 6 today.
He's at 30.
Or the other day, sorry.
39 from the field and 80% from the line. But yeah, based on everything we know about him, he's a crap free throw shooter. He's a great guy from the field. Like, he shot 65% from the field at Duke, and he shot like 54 or something from the free throw line. But he's hit 80%. Like, it's not on many attempts. But again, when I look at the amount of touches that he's getting, he could be a monster for this team in terms of his scoring. But the percentage, I'm worried about a little bit. I don't think he's going to be that guy who immediately is a 55% guy. He is going to be under 50 for probably the first couple of months of the season. In saying that, he's probably going to be, I've got him projected as a 15 and 8 sort of player. But watch your free throws, because it is going to hurt with his free throws. But he is going to score. He's going to rebound. He's going to get blocks. He'll probably win Rookie of the Year. Doesn't mean I think he's a good player, though. But he has fantasy value under certain team philosophies. That's the best way of putting it. Matt, anything else on Philadelphia? Jeremy Grant's getting a few starts. Should we make anything of that?
No, I don't think so. Where's Nick Stauskas at?
He hasn't played yet.
Is he?
He hasn't played.
Okay.
He's
had a massive off-season for Canada. Are you still holding out hope that he can have a hot start of the season?
Or absolutely.
Want to pick him up off the waiver wire, draftable?
I think he's draftable. I think he's one of those guys, like you mentioned before, he's a flyer, a last round flyer guy, and you hold on for the... Look, I think he's due back this weekend from the stress reaction in his leg. I think that he's going to be a huge piece for them. He can handle the ball. He played a lot of point at Michigan. He can get you some assists. You might see 3.5 assists from him. He was terrible in Sacramento, but Sacramento is also terrible, and they handle rookies poorly, so I'm not too concerned about it from that point of view. But he could also be that guy that I mentioned that you pick up for the first month and you drop him because he just does nothing in those first 2 weeks. I still think that he's standard league ownable. Do you disagree?
No, I don't. I like him, and I did read where they're looking at playing him as a point guard as well, which is really interesting. So
he's
one of these guys who, that he's not playing the preseason, a bit like a Yusuf Nurkic, who's sort of out of mind, out of sight, out of mind sort of guy. I think both of those guys are worth drafting and worth just being patient with and holding on to, because I think they'll eventually come good.
That's a good transition into the Denver Nuggets, Matt. Emmanuel Mudiay. He has been... He's fun. He has turned the ball over a lot. He's almost at 5 turnovers a game. He's hitting way more threes than I anticipated. He's averaging 13 and 6, a steal, 1.5 threes. The percentages are predictably brutal, 34 and 69. But the counting stats are enticing. You have to basically be punting both those percentages, though, to deal with him. How do you see him fitting in this season?
Yeah, well, this is what we expected from the rookies. Yep. They always come in, efficiency's poor. The counting stats are always going to be pretty good. Makes him almost impossible to own in rotisserie legs.
Can't deal with that in roto.
Just going to kill your field goal percentage, but head-to-head leagues, if you're going down the Kyle McEwen, don't care about percentages route, then, he's a good sort of mid-round option in the sort of 70-80 range, I would expect. I won't be owning him anywhere, but...
I don't think I will be either.
No, he's got the starting role there in Denver, and he's going to put up some big lines.
you're going to have to be punting efficiency, which is fine, but he is going to hurt in both of those ones. And Matt, that's a nice segue. You actually just break from this preseason talk. On the weekend, which is going to be Saturday 6 p.m. Eastern, Saturday 3 p.m. Pacific, Sunday 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Time, I'm going to be doing a live Yahoo 12-team head-to-head mock draft, and I'm going to try and do something which I don't know if it's ever been done before. It'll probably work out horribly, but we'll see how it goes. I want to do as we record it and stream it, I'm going to do a fantasy roundtable with a lot of people in the mock, in the podcast. So we could have 6-7 guys all on the show at once, and there's some pretty interesting names that are going to be in this mock draft. It's going to be myself, clearly, not that I'm interesting, but it's going to have the Prince of All Star 5, Matt Smith. We're going to have Seth Klein in there. Mark Roberts is going to be involved. Cole McEwen is going to be in there. JJ Kelly is going to be involved. We have got Russell Peddle of Numberfire. I'm going to have my brother's going to be in there as well. And I'm going to have Ryan Nouse from Roto World involved in the mock draft as well. So we're still working on a couple of other people to get in there, but there's going to be a lot of us. We're going to have a lot of us talking at the time. Oh, Zach Ruiz from the Fantasy Fix is also going to be on there. So we're going to have a lot of voices happening, Matt, and it's going to be an interesting discussion, I think.
What pick do I have?
I've got no idea yet. I haven't done. Once I get all the names settled, then we'll do a pick, and work out what pick you're going to get.
Sounds good. Look forward to that. It'll be fun.
I don't know which guys are going to be joining me in there on the podcast. I think that you're going to be in there with me. Mark and Kyle will be there. Seth and Zach will be there. I'm not sure exactly who else, but we'll have JJ might jump in for a bit. Going to have a few guys in there discussing all these picks that they go down. So you'll see a fair few guys in there in terms of writers or podcasters or broadcasters in the fantasy industry, and see how a mock draft goes down. So make sure you check that out on Saturday or Sunday. Check your local guides for listing details. The Nuggets, Joffrey Laverne, my boy Joffrey. I've been big on Joffrey for a long time. What do you make of this? He has been great. 14.5 points, 10 rebounds, half a three. Absolutely nothing else. What do you make of this? You see reports coming out, yeah, Kenneth Freed's going to get traded. He's going to take Freed's starting job. I don't buy that at all. I don't know what to make of Laverne. I've got him projected at 15 minutes a game for the season. Is he a guy, yeah, I'm taking him and hoping that something gets moved or traded? What are you making of Laverne?
Yeah, pretty much. I had Kendall Marshall and Tony Roten owned in my Red Rock Listener League. I dropped Tony Roten for Zach Levine, and now I've gone and dropped Kendall Marshall. I've actually picked up Joffrey Laverne. That's a shocking name. Just for that reason, for the big points, the big rebounds, the massive boost in field goal percentage. He hit two threes there against Dallas as well, being super effective from the free throw line. It's not going to get any steals or blocks, but as I mentioned before, Yusuf Nurkic is coming off a limited preseason, may not start the season, which will open up minutes for Laverne. So he's sort of an own and stash and hope and pray and just see what happens, a bit like that guy who's playing point guard for Dallas.
And okay, now I've been trying to work out, I've always just pronounced his name as Joffrey Lavernier. Never heard anyone else say it that way, so I've transitioned into Laverne. I've just pulled up his basketball reference page, and they've got the phonetic spelling, and it is Lavernier. So I'm fist pumping myself here that it is Joffrey Lavernier. So I'm going back to calling him Lavernier. And I wanted to give one quick mention on the CBS Iron Basketball podcast the other day. Zach Harper trotted out possibly the greatest nickname I've ever heard for Joffrey Lavernier. Now, do you know what Joffrey looks like?
I can't say I do.
Okay, well, think Miles Plumlee. Miles Plumlee, side part, beard, angular face. He looks like Miles Plumlee. So Zach's nickname for him was Kilometers Plumlee, and I'm on board with that. Metric system, European, I'm all for it. Kilometers Plumlee, and I just wanted to bring that up because I think it's a superb nickname, because the likeness between those two is it's pretty uncanny. But I love Lavernier, but I don't. Is Nikola Jokic a better player?
Do we know yet?
We've got no idea. Jokic, Nurkic, Lavernier. We don't know who the best player is out of these guys. I still think it's Nurkic. But I don't think Lavernier is a center. I think he's a I think he's a four. I think he's a stretch four. I don't think he can replace Nurkic. I think that Jokic is that guy. I don't think Lavernier can do that. It's going to be interesting to see the way that Mike Malone runs it. But yeah, for sure, it's okay grabbing him. But I reckon in a week into the season, we won't see a huge amount from him, enough to hold on to in a standard league. But he's been really, really awesome. Another guy who's been impressive, or more impressive in the fact that he's getting a stack of minutes, Gary Harris, who's a real chance to win the starting shooting guard job. Is he a flyer guy?
Still not in 10 and 12s for me. I don't know. There's just too many questions on this Denver Nuggets team. Like, not a team I watch a real lot of. Not a team I follow closely. So they just seem to be a bit all over the place in terms of their rotation. Like, Randy Foy can come in and have some games. Gary Harris, as you mentioned, you got Wilson Chandler, Gallo, who can play, you know, shooting guard, small forward, power forward. Jimmy Nelson can get some minutes off the bench. So it's just a bit of a mess and an unknown situation for me. And apart from Lavernier, who I've picked up, I still really like Yusuf Nurkic. I think
he's
going to be a long-term prospect. You're going to have to be really patient with him. But, in terms of the guard situation, it doesn't do anything for me. I'll pass on those guys.
I think, Nurkic is often referred to as the Bosnian boogie. Because of his efficiency. But one thing that he does do that's similar to Cousins is he's going to get you a shitload of steals for a center. Like, he is a guy that is going to be a one and a half sort of threat, and, you know, 8 or 9 rebounds. And it's not, you know, Boogie gets that, Nerlens Noel gets that, but not many centers get you 1.5 steals. He's a guy who can do that. Now, his percentages are going to be, they can be an issue. His fouling can be an issue, but I think Nurkic is a great guy at the end of the draft, especially if you've got an IR spot. Just grab him around there and stash him. If he misses the first few weeks, I think that he could really, really explode. Because I do think he's still the best player out of all those three guys we mentioned. And I'm not even counting Darrell Arthur and JJ Hickson, because they're garbage. They shouldn't be getting any minutes. I want those three Euros to get the bulk of the front core minutes. And if Fareed's still there, he's going to get some too. But he has looked he's looked pretty poor as well in preseason. Any reason to panic on Fareed? Apart from the fact that he's not good?
All of a sudden, you're owning a lot of guys who aren't good. Kenneth Fareed, Rajon Rondo.
I know. It's because, Matt, and this is the thing that I'm still raising funds to get this tattooed across my ass. It's not about grabbing the best players. It's about making the best team. And I think that what Fareed does for him, I don't like Fareed. I don't think he's a good player. He's got no defensive stats. He's a rebounder. He's an energy guy. But what I needed when I drafted him is I needed a good field goal percentage and I needed rebounds. I didn't need anything else that he gave me. And he gave me that in such a bigger amount than what the other guys who were around at that point. That's why I grabbed him there. But I still don't think he's a good player, and he still is at risk of losing his job at some point, because he's just not good. I'm sorry. He's just not a good basketball player. And he will get found out at some point in the season where an actual better player takes his spot.
I think you're going to regret taking those guys.
I already do, especially Rondo.
I already do. Yeah. Still got 2 days, and he's already having regrets. And if anyone would like to donate to Josh's ass tattoo, just joshlloyd48@hotmail.com, and he will kindly go up there to Bondi Inc. and get that tattooed on his white backside. But just on Yusuf Nurkic, like, he could do a Nerlens Noel of last year and just be a dud over the first half of the season.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then come all far break, just go for it, just bust out big time. You know, as you said, 1.5 blocks, 1.5 steals, 12 points, 8 rebounds, and just go and dominate and win you a fantasy championship. So, Yusuf Nurkic, keep a close eye on him.
What other teams have been interesting to you this preseason, Matty?
That's a good question. Let's talk about Paul George, because you and I, we have to admit, we weren't high on him. I'm still have my doubts and my question marks. He's looked really good. He's had a couple of massive games. What's your take now on Paul George?
My take is still the same. He has looked good. He has put up impressive numbers. If I just bring up his numbers, we'll have a look. He's averaged 19 points in 21 minutes, almost 2.5 threes. But what he used to be a guy that as a shooting guard could get you 6 or 7 rebounds. He's only 4 rebounds is okay. 1 assist, 1 steal, 0.3 blocks, pretty solid percentages. He's been good. I'll give him that. And he's scoring a lot. We do tend to buy into scoring numbers more than we probably should. Oh, look, he's in 19 in 21 minutes. But the other numbers, they're not They're okay. They're not fantastic, but I'm still scared. I'm still not. Look, his numbers and the way I've got him projected, they come out like really good. His numbers come out superb. I've got him projected at 20 points, 2 threes, 6.7 rebounds, 1.7 steals, 3 assists, like really good numbers. I'm not taking him when that projection comes out. I think it comes out at him being about 12th or 13th. I'm not taking him there. I just don't trust. He'll do this, but will he do it consistently? Yeah, everything is saying yes, he's going to come out like this, mathematics-wise, but I don't want to take that risk. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, it's still too early for me. You said earlier that you're not a big fan of Jimmy Butler. You've got some concerns around him as well, given the opportunity. Paul George or Jimmy Butler in the second round?
Butler, because of the worry.
Yeah.
And I'm in the same boat with KD. Like, his numbers come out well, but I'm still. What have we seen? 3 games? It's not enough. Actually,
yeah. He's a really good one to speak about, Kevin Durant, because I've found out that I've got the number 4 pick in a draft next week.
Nah, not for me. I wouldn't take him.
I really want to take Durant there, but he's not filling me with confidence with his preseason performance.
No, I wouldn't take him at pick 4 there. Again, look, his numbers might project out well. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying in on him until I see it for longer. And that means I won't probably draft him anywhere. But if I have pick 4, I'm taking Paul. I would take Cousins. I would take Westbrook. And then build my team that way. Because, you know, those guys, their value comes out pretty similarly. But the risk is anyone can get injured. We know anyone can get injured. But someone coming off a serious injury, I don't want Durant at 4. Even though, we're going to throw this out at me all the time. He's the only player who's got a chance to challenge Davis for number 1. And for a starter, I rebut that and say, no, he's not, because Curry's number 1 anyway to me. But that's fine. But I don't care that I picked him at 4 and he went to 1. Oh, that's great. But you pick him at 4, he also could go to 68 because he doesn't play. That's the risk. If you pick Westbrook at 4 and he drops off, where does he go? 7? Where, 6? 8? Who cares? Like, if you pick a guy 4 and then he misses 50 games. It's a lot worse than a guy having a slight decrease, and that's why I don't want to pick him at pick 4, because when there's other options available. Now, if I'm picking at pick 8 and Kevin Durant's there and the drop-off between him and the next guy is bigger, then I go, you know what, maybe I do take that risk. Maybe I take a flyer there. But at pick 4, Matt, I wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, I've still got another week to sleep on it, and I just want to see, I know he's been limited to 22 minutes a game, I just want to see him come out and have that big game and say, yes, Kevin Durant's back. He's got his form and his touch, but there's just something holding me back at the moment just to say he's not quite there. And it just looks like this is still Russell Westbrook's team. Like, he's getting the rebounds, sprints the floor, and either then gets a layup, pulls up for a jump shot, or passes it to Durant, who then shoots, or Enes Kanter, or Serge Ibaka, or Anthony Morrow. Or it still feels like this is Russell Westbrook's team from last year when he was just going out putting up those big triple doubles. So,
well, that's interesting. Let's have a look at this. In that they've both played 2 games against NBA opposition. They've both averaged 21.2 minutes in those 2 games. Westbrook is scoring 16.5 points. Durant 12.5 points. They're both hitting a 3 a game. Westbrook is rebounding 5.5 rebounds. Durant 1. Westbrook is averaging 7.5 assists. Durant 1.5. Durant's at 1.5. 1.5 rebounds. Assists, 2. So 7.5 assists to Westbrook, 2 to Durant. Westbrook, 1 steal a game. Durant, 0. Westbrook, 0 blocks. Durant, 0. Westbrook, 57% from the field. Durant, 45. Westbrook hasn't missed a free throw. Durant, 63%. What the hell's going on? It just adds to me, look, I just don't want to touch him at pick 4 or 5. These are not indicative of what he will do in the regular season. There is no way they're indicative. But show something. Do something.
Yeah. That's what I want to see. I just want to see a big, 25-point game, 10 from 15 from the field, hit a few threes, stealing a block, and whether it's still just getting back into the...
It could be rust.
Getting back into basketball, whether it's the new coach as well and the new system, and, now he's got Enes Kanter around him, and I don't know. He's a really, really interesting one to just watch over the next week and 2 weeks. And yeah, like I said, with pick 4, I honestly don't know which way I'm going to go at this stage.
It could be rust. It could be confidence. It could be lack of confidence in the foot. I just want to see something. Like, shows we know how good you can be, but in these first couple of games, just show us something. Like, you just haven't shown us anything yet. And that's another reason, apart from the if he had to come out and play, like, Paul George has come out and hasn't shown us anything to really be concerned about, but I'm still concerned. Durant has shown us, like, what's this? Like, what are you doing? Why are these numbers, they're not even, like, they're marginally lowered. They're, like, cut in half, some of the, most of them are pretty much cut in half. And that's where you go, what's actually going on here? And I don't want to take that risk at pick four. I'm going to sound stupid when he comes out and wins the MVP, but I just don't want to take that risk at pick four. We talked about one of your boyfriends earlier on. Go ahead.
Yep. I was just going to say there's two more guys I want to speak about, but we can
on Oklahoma City?
No, just in general.
I was going to go to Portland and talk to your boyfriend, CJ McCollum.
Spot on.
Go on, give us the spiel.
The first game, 5 points, 4 assists. Second game against Golden State, 19 points, 5 assists. 30 points and 4 assists. 16 points, 5 assists. Now, I know some of those games were or have been without Damian Lillard.
The last two, haven't they?
I'm still on board, still love him. You've still got your doubts. Where are you at right now?
I'm still doubtful. There is almost zero chance that I draft CJ McCollum this year. And it's not because I don't like him. It's because I'm not willing to go inside the top 100 to get him. I think that he's a guy that he's going to have a pretty poor field goal percentage, I think. He'll be a points and three guys, yes. I just don't think that he's going to be able to do what he's been doing in the last couple of games when Lillard is back. He's going to be a real negative on defense for this team as well. Not that this team's going to be any good. But I don't think that what we've seen in the two games without Lillard is indicative of what we're going to see from him. And some people are just going super, like, crazy high on him. Like, you know, let's pick him inside the top 80. Let's pick him before Mirotic. Let's pick him before, like, so many guys, before Covington. Like, you're not picking him before Covington, are you? Or Mirotic?
No, neither of those guys. But once I reckon I get to about 80, that's when he comes right at the top of my draft board and I'm targeting them. There's no one else to score on this team.
I'm going to say something a little bit controversial, is that if we're in between 80 and 90, I would rather take Myers Leonard than CJ McCollum at that point.
Why?
I'm a massive Myers Leonard fan. He's going to get me rebounds. He'll block some shots. He'll be actually good at both percentages, which McCollum won't be. No, he'll score okay, and he'll hit. They're averaging the same amount of threes in the preseason. I would rather what Leonard does than McCollum. I'm probably not going to pick him that early, but if I had to pick between the two guys there, I would probably pick Leonard.
So who are you targeting in that 80 to 100 range?
It really depends on the rest of my team and what I've done earlier on.
Don't give me the depends answer. Come on, mate. Who are you going for?
In that range?
Do you want him over J.R. Smith, over J.J. Redick?
Redick, no. Smith, yes. I don't have J.R. Smith in my top 100, I don't think. I have to check that. But J.R. Smith is a guy who maybe the first 6 weeks is top 100 valuable, probably not for the rest of the season. Not over J.J. Redick, though. I think J.J. Redick was a top 40 player, a top 30 player for the last 2 months of last season. He's not going to be that. Eric Gordon?
Eric Gordon, CJ McCollum.
I'd probably rather Gordon, to be honest. I'm not confident about it, but I'd rather Gordon.
I'll take CJ.
I don't want this to sound like I don't like CJ McCollum. I do really like him. I think he is poised for a breakout. He'll clearly have the best season of his career. He hasn't proven he can stay healthy, and he actually hasn't proven that he's good yet. He hasn't really proven anything that he's good. He had a pretty decent playoffs, and that was impressive, but he hasn't proven that he's good yet. And I think that to go really that early, and especially in like a 12 team league in the 80s, it's too high. Like, that's halfway. He has to do it. That's why I probably won't draft him, because yes, I'm all for grabbing sleepers and guys that can break out, but not at that point. Not when there's other guys who are more proven. If he's outside the top 100, I'm okay taking a grab on a sleeper guy outside the top 100. I just don't want to do it in the midpoint of my draft.
But tell me who's more proven at pick 90.
Eric Gordon.
You're not going to take Joe Johnson over him, are you?
No, I'm not taking Joe Johnson over him. But Joe Johnson's a guy that's about 130, 140 years old.
Eric Gordon's injury prone as well. He's going to break down.
He is. Well, they both are. That's look. There isn't many great guys around that point. But you know,
Kevin Martin.
Nope. No chance I'm taking Kevin Martin there. But if Michael Carter-Williams is there, I'm taking Michael Carter-Williams over CJ McCollum. And he's around in the 80s. If Darren Williams is there, I'm taking Darren Williams over CJ McCollum.
Darren Williams is going to get injured as well.
But he's still better than CJ McCollum.
You don't like Darren Williams. You've just drafted Rajon Rondo and whoever that other, Kenneth Faried, and you don't like them. You don't like Darren Williams, and you're going to end up with him on your team as well.
He's on pretty much all of my teams. Would you take Derrick Rose over CJ McCollum?
No.
Really? I would have Rose over him for sure. At pick what, at pick 85.
Derrick Rose is going to be sitting on your IR for half the season. It's going to be worthless.
But so could CJ McCollum. It's the same using the reverse argument on me. CJ McCollum could be as well. Anyone could be. That's why I don't like to use necessarily the injury thing. But McCollum hasn't proved that he could ever stay healthy yet. He hasn't stayed healthy at all through these two seasons. It's only been two seasons. But a guy that, you know, Michael Carter-Williams is probably going to be available there. Markieff Morris is probably going to be available there. Would you take Markieff over him?
I don't want anything to do with Markieff Morris this season.
Is that because you hate him or because of what he's going to provide on the court?
I'm wearing my son's shirt, but Well, first up, the Suns are going to be terrible this season. And second of all, we don't know if he's going to stay there. We don't know if he's going to leave. Don't know what's going to happen with his off-court issues. I want nothing to do with Markieff Morris and his whole situation. He's, in terms of fantasy, he dropped right off in the second half of last season. He does a little bit of everything, but he's not a standout in anything. He doesn't do anything well. He's just across the board average. So, I'm done with Markieff Morris.
Fair enough. If Markieff was available there, I would take him. Who's the other guy you want? I've got one more guy I want to talk about. Who's the other guy you want to talk about?
All right, well, the guy I want to talk about is arguably the standout guy from this preseason. That's Kyle Lowry.
Yes.
26 points in the first game against the Clippers, 25 in the second against the Lakers, and then he went and dropped 40 on the Timberwolves with 6 threes, shooting something like 68% from the field and 92 from the free throw line. Looks slim, looks healthy. Does that change things in terms of Kyle Lowry? He was a sort of the guy with Jeff Teague not getting a lot of love, sort of falling down into that third round. Is he now someone who comes into the second round calculations?
I think he's, well, before this preseason breakout, I had him at 26 on my head-to-head rankings. So I was already pretty aggressive on him compared to most people. I think that you can sneak him into the back end of the 12th of the second round. The guys I had ahead of him were Nick Vucevic, Al Horford, Brook Lopez, Marc Gasol, Victor Oladipo. They're the top 5 guys ahead of him, and I'd be okay with you taking him above any of those guys, depending on what you're looking at. If you really want to make sure you're getting a point guard, and say you went Anthony Davis first, I think taking Kyle Lowry with your second pick is a pretty decent move. Now, if you took Steph Curry first or Steph Curry second, I don't know if pairing Kyle Lowry with him is necessarily the best way to go, but I think that he's right at that round 2, round 3 turn now.
So if you took DeMarcus Cousins at 5 or 6, would you come that early into Kyle Lowry, say at 16, 17, 18?
It'd be between him and Bledsoe that I'd want to look at that point. Again, I'll have to relook at my ranking since looking at what's happened in preseason. But I couldn't fault you. I couldn't fault anyone if you took Lowry there. He was that player in 2013-14. He was that player for the first 3 months of last season, and then he got injured. And I don't want to hear anything about him slacking off because he got paid, because it's bullshit. He got paid, and in the first 3 months, he was a legit top 10 player for the first couple of months of last season, straight after getting paid. So it's got nothing to do with it. He was that good. It might be a little early, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I got asked a question today on Reddit about whether it's Bledsoe or Lowry. Still Bledsoe for me, just in terms of across the board production.
Yeah, okay.
But if you really want that big kick in 3-pointers, then yeah, Lowry could be the guy for you in that middle to late second round.
Chris Middleton, what's going on?
Chris Middleton, wow.
What's going on? I was down on him this year just because of the talent arriving, and I thought, yeah, he had that sort of season. Like dream season, like everything is going right. Other guys are going down. He has been an abject disaster this preseason. It is not what he is going to be, but how much should we ramp up our level of concern, considering he's averaging 5 points and zero threes in 22 minutes?
But it's not just Middleton. The whole Bucks team for me has been disappointing.
Apart from Greg Monroe, they've been putrid.
What, Giannis has been, he's been well below.
Carter Williams has had some games, but they've been some good, some bad.
I was really high on them coming into the season, and now, you know, I was expecting them to push for a top four, top five spot in the East, and I don't want to say that they're not going to do that this season, but they look really, really average.
I don't know if you've got the stats open in front of you, but if you don't, who's leading the Bucks in scoring this preseason?
I know that, if I can just quickly look at their team, that I know Rashad Vaughn had a massive game off the bench, so it wouldn't surprise me if he was leading their scoring.
Yeah, he's at like 16.7 points a game. Only him and Monroe are in double figures.
Mm.
And Vaughn's doing literally nothing else.
Yeah, Chris Middleton, for me, he's quickly sliding down the rankings. I sort of had him in the 60-70 range. He's not a top 50 player, but...
I had him outside the top 70, and I'm pretty happy that I've got him there. All that means is I'm just never going to draft him.
I'm not going to be drafting him either. No. It's a worry, that's for sure. All right, one more. This guy called Jenkins at Dallas. What's going on there?
Mark Roberts must be absolutely frothing at the moment because... he has been on the John Jenkins bandwagon for the whole offseason, basically. He said, yep, his per 36 numbers, his per possession numbers come out fantastically. Well, yeah, that's fine, but is he actually going to get minutes? Well, he is. He's getting minutes. I've had to bump him up in my rankings. He's going to play significantly until Matthews comes back. He's averaging 20 points a game in the preseason. He's hitting over two threes a game. He doesn't do a huge amount else, even though he's somehow at 0.7 blocks, 0.7 steals. He hasn't missed a free throw. He's at 49% from the field. I think that you have to end up grabbing him off the waiver wire now and just seeing what happens. And again, it just might be that first month that you get something out of him. But he has looked, he's looked like Michael Jordan. I don't know what's going on with him.
It's a big call. I honestly don't know what to do with him, with Wes Matthews. Like, Dallas have been rolling out the worst starting five over the preseason, bar none.
Well, they're not going to get that much better.
Well, they got old man syndrome. Darren Williams, Raymond Felton, Wes Matthews.
Yep.
Chandler Parsons is youngish but injured. We've hardly seen Dirk Nowitzki. Like, it's been Charlie Villanueva and JJ Barea and John Jenkins. So
I'll tell you someone I really like on this team. I like Jeremy Evans a lot. That's the most, probably one of the more unpopular opinions out there. I really like Jeremy Evans. I want him
but
to
you
get.
Also like Dwight Powell.
I like who?
Dwight Powell.
Yeah, I do like Dwight Powell as well. Dwight Powell hasn't played yet, I don't think, in the preseason. I think he's hurt.
Who do you like more?
I like Powell more from his fantasy point of view. I like Evans more as a player.
Yeah. So I saw you added Jenkins in our Red Rock Listener League. Is that correct?
Yes, I did. Yes, I dropped Patrick Patterson.
Yeah. See, I like that move.
Patrick Patterson's been brutal. He's been horrible. Now, I mean, that's whatever. If someone else snatches up Patrick Patterson and he breaks out, whatever. Who cares? I just grab John Jenkins and we'll see how it goes. And that's all it's sort of about at this point. Just, hey, this guy's showing something. Maybe we'll just hold him. You don't want to go and grab five guys who are showing something because it's not going to work out. And grab a guy and see how it works out. And I did that with Jenkins and we'll see. We'll see if it pans out. I just need to make sure I got one share in John Jenkins so when I discuss it with Mark, I don't feel completely left out.
How are we going for time here?
I've got a little bit more. If you've got a bit more time, I'm happy to keep going.
I know I keep saying one more guy, but I've just realised we haven't mentioned the rookie himself who's breaking out in front of our eyes, and that's Stanley Johnson.
Yep. Now, he wasn't all that great today, but he has been really good, and he's a must-draft player for me at this point, but I'm not going top 100 on him. I think he's last round or two. I think he's going to get... Look, Ersan Ilyasova's been on the bench the last couple of games. Stanley Johnson starting. Marcus Morris is looking good as well. Marcus Morris sliding over to the four. I think that Johnson is going to have value. It'll probably be spotty at best. And if we head into December, there'll be a massive chance that you can't hold on to him based on what he's doing. But I think that he is definitely worth drafting to see what happens with that last pick. How do you view it?
Yeah, I agree. I wasn't convinced coming into the season. He had a massive summer league. Still, question marks, but he's really pushing Marcus Morris and Ursa Ilyasova. I don't think it's a matter of whether he's going to start or come off the bench. He's going to get...
No, it won't matter.
What have you got him projected for in terms of playing time?
Good question. Let me bring that up.
It's like 25 to 30 minutes seems...
27,
you know,
I've got him at.
Yeah, got on.
27, he comes out at almost 12 points, a 3, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.3 steals, half a block.
Yeah. Yep.
Field goal percentage will probably hurt you a bit, but that, you know, that comes out at around that 115, 140 sort of range in that area.
I was going to say exactly that. If once you get into sort of the 120, 140 range, I'd definitely be drafting Stanley Johnson there. So he's already shown that he can fill the box score.
Yeah, steals. The steals he's going to get look like they're going to be decent. He's going to be a steals and threes guy. He's going to score a bit. They're using him as a higher up option than what I thought they would. You know, Kyle McEwen's all over Stanley Johnson. He's a big Pistons fan. He's watched a lot of Stanley Johnson. He is all over him. He's big on him, and I think that you have to draft him at this point. And I'm not a one who's a must-draft rookie guy, but you can get Stanley Johnson in those last couple of rounds. If you miss out because someone grabs him at pick 100, fine. That's probably not going to work in their favor. But if he's there in the last couple of rounds, by all means. I'm gonna do a Matt Smith here, and I'm going to say one more guy. Rudy Gobert.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you don't draft Rudy Gobert for his offense. It's been bad, but you don't draft him for that. He's only shooting 47%. But because they're using him in different ways, he'll be fine in terms of his percentage. He'll get back up there. He's still only going to be a 10-point-a-game scorer. His blocks have been low. He's averaging less than one a game in 19 minutes. But again, he's not going too aggressively at it. The free throws worry me, Matt. In 19 minutes a game, he's taking 3.5 free throw attempts and only hitting half of them. That's punt territory.
Unfortunately, it is. Yeah, once you get in that 3.5 to 4 range,
that's 3.5 in 19 minutes. That's 5 a game at 50%. That's bye-bye free throw percentage. If that continues,
that's making a big dent. That's Andre Drummond plus style. I'm still not concerned. I know we've spoken about like Kevin Durant and Chris Middleton and these guys. You know, we're still having doubts and concerns, but Rudy Gobert, not so much for me. I'm confident in what he can do. He'll still be one of the leading guys in rebounds and blocks and give you that big boost in field goal percentage. So to me, he's still a safe early second round pick.
Yeah, see, that's where I would go against it. And I would say I don't want him early second round. I grabbed him at 16 or 17 on a punt free throw percentage team. But I don't think if I'm not punting free throw, because there's a big risk that he hurts that category irreparably. That is a risk. It's probably about a 20% risk. But there is a risk that he hurts it irreparably. I don't want him at the start of the second round because it's going to be hard to recover the points. Like, he is going to put you in a hole in the points. Yes, he's going to give you big blocks. He's going to give you good rebounds and good field goal percentage, but you're not going to get many other good numbers for him. So I think I want someone else at pick. I've seen him go at pick 12, and to me, that's too early, pick 12. Mid-range, 16 to 20 is okay if you're willing to factor in that, you know what, you might get your free throws destroyed. Aside from that, it's hard for me to look at him in that second round range. And I've been sort of a bit like that even before these preseason struggles, that you really have to build around him in a specific way because of his lack of scoring, because, you know, his value is concentrated so highly in that blocks category. And it's a massive value in that category, but it means that his other numbers they're not that good. And you have to really build specifically. And now that, yeah, and the free throw worry. I said it the other day, and people were like, you know, hanging shit on me. Josh is worried. What are you worried? It's because I'm not worried that he's not involved in the offense. I don't care. He's not going to be a 20-point scorer. I never thought he was going to be that. I don't care that he's averaging 5 points a game in the preseason. It's the fact that his free throws, they were supposed to improve, and he's hitting at such a big volume and not hitting them, that if you drafted him thinking, I'm going to grab a block score, he's not hurting my free throws, you could be very wrong. And it could cost you significantly. Would you rather Ibaka over him? Or would you rather Gobert still?
Well, I already have drafted Rudy Gobert over him, but that was back in August in our listener league.
Yep.
I would still give it to Rudy Gobert for now, because he gives you that extra bump in rebounds and the extra bump in field goal percentage.
That's true.
You can argue that, you know, Serge Ibaka could get back above 50 and he does hit a 3 a game, but I still like the big boost that Rudy Gobert gives you in those 3 categories. And although we've just discussed his free throw concerns. He's still, right now, as I speak, this might change in 2 months' time, but right now, he still isn't as bad as Drummond and Jordan.
No, so, he's not that yet. But there is a bigger chance than you would have thought 2 months ago that he transitions to that category with the increase in attempts. There is a bigger risk of that now than there was. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah. No, I understand that. And yeah, whether it's him, whether it's teams, Hacker Gobert, there's definitely that chance that that happens. So,
and I'll still
back him in.
I had him down fairly low in my Roto rankings because of that. I had him at, I haven't updated my Roto rankings for a couple of weeks. I had him at 37 in Roto leagues because I just don't want that risk of that. And plus the other low categories. In basketball, Monso, we like to call it like a Christmas tree, very bright green and bright red. Some big positives, some big negatives, and I don't really want to deal with that necessarily in Roto, so I've got him way down in Roto. And, just bear that in mind. When you're looking at drafting him in that top of the second round, are you prepared that you may need to punt free throws or that he is going to absolutely hurt you there? Like, you have to be prepared for that as a possibility, not a likely one, but it has to be in your mind that, you know what, this could actually happen because the way that it's trending at the moment hasn't been ideal. You got any other one more for me, or are you happy with that now?
Did I hear you say on another podcast that Anthony Davis was only elite in three categories?
Probably.
And which three categories?
Let me bring it up. And the reason I said that, it's to do with my definition of elite. It's elite when I have a standard score of over 2.
So that's points, blocks, and field goal percentage.
If I bring it up now, it's points, blocks, and field goal percentage, correct.
So Anthony Davis isn't an elite rebounder?
It's based purely off the definition of standard scores of over 2, and he comes in at 1.67 in rebounds. 10 rebounds is good, but it's not. When I was comparing him to Steph Curry, who has standard scores, Z scores of over 2 in 4 categories. And that's where I said, I want Curry over Davis. I want those 4, you know, statistically elite categories. He's still a great rebound number, but it's not that elite 2 standard. Like 2 is 2 standard deviations away from the mean, which is significant. 1.67 is still pretty good, but I was you know, giving a pretty defined you know, way to look at it as a standard score over 2, and he fell behind it. Now he's still really good, but I want Curry because I want 4 of those elite categories.
I know he's not even close to 2, but I'd argue that Anthony Davis is elite in steals and free throw percentage for a big man.
Now, this again, I was not taking any consideration into position, and you're right. For steals, 1.3 is really, really good. His free throws are superb as well at that sort of rate for who he is. It's fantastic. But I was purely going off those numbers where you can get, you know, Steph's points, threes, steals, and assists all come in at a standard score of over 2, and that's where I was basing it on.
So you're still taking Curry 1, Davis 2?
I'm still taking Curry 1, yep.
All right, I'll take Anthony Davis.
And in the end, I don't think it really matters because I think they're going to be, I think those two are probably going to be, along with James Harden, clearly ahead of everyone else. If you've got a top 3 pick, it shouldn't matter who you take because it's what you do with it after that and how you build it, and it's not about grabbing the best players, Matt. It's about building the best team. So I don't care. It doesn't really matter who I get out of those guys. Personal preference, I take Curry. But whatever. You can grab any guy there, and there is no wrong answer there. If you took James Harden at 1, I wouldn't say that's dumb. I think that's fine. You can take them and build them in. They've all got their own certain abilities and strengths that, you know, form together, form the power trio of fantasy basketball. We had one question that we needed to answer, which I think is a relatively straightforward one. It comes from Ryan Agnew. He says, I know you say there isn't a great deal of difference between the middle range 40 or so guys, but I've had a trade proposed for my Marc Gasol for Derek Favors and Aaron Aflalo. Marc gives you pretty linear returns, not huge games, more steady production. You know what you're getting most nights. Although I'm thinking with Gobert starting now, there are more shots in the offense for Favors to carry some of that interior offense, which started to kick in towards the end of the 14-15 season, post-Enes Kanter trade. He's an obvious breakout candidate, but essentially the question is, do I go to the bank on Marc and take the solid production, or look to cash in on a fifth round pick vaulting into the 25 to 30 range like Favors. And he says Aflalo is just a throwaway. And I'm glad you included that, because otherwise I was going to say there's no need to even talk about Aaron Aflalo in this deal. It is essentially Gasol for Favors. Mark, what say you? Not Mark, Matt. What am I saying? Mark? Mark Gasol? What say you? Matt, what say you?
Matt with the T. No, it's still Mark Gasol. Yep. So Derek Favors is ranked, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 positions behind Mark Gasol. So he's still giving you across the board production. I really like Favors, don't get me wrong, but better efficiency, more assists. I think Favors in terms of rebounds and points will be pretty close. Might even edge him a little bit in blocks, 1.8, maybe to 1.5.
Yeah, he'll get more blocks.
But across the board, it's Mark Gasol.
I'm going to say my stupid response again, in that to me it is Gasol, yes. But I could see a case where, you know what, I really need to get 10 rebounds and Marc Gasol is going to give me 7. I want 2 blocks and Marc Gasol is not maybe going to get me that. Maybe I need that really big Derek Favors field goal percentage and Marc Gasol is not going to quite give me that. I can see you potentially leaning Favors ahead of Gasol. You probably wouldn't want to do it straight up because Gasol is worth more, but he succeeds in other areas than what Favors does. Like, Gasol's going to give you good assists for a big man. He's going to give that solid, as he said, the solid production, the really good percentages, the good free throw percentage, which is what Favors isn't going to give you. So they do have different strengths and different things there. But overall, I'm saying Gasol is the guy I want. Or if you're doing it and you think that, yeah, I'm going to get Favors, get something else back. Get something else better than Aaron Aflalo, because Aaron Aflalo shouldn't be owned in a 10-team league, at least. In a 12-team league, he's not going to be owned by me, I can assure you of that. So I'd be okay doing it. I'd be okay getting Favors back, but get something better back than Aflalo. Get another top 60 guy back, and then maybe you can start talking. Is that it, Matt? Are we done, do you think? Anything else you want to add in?
No, I'm pretty happy.
That's good. I'm glad you are happy, Matt, because we're done. Remind me, you have to remind me, because I know where to find you on Twitter. Remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter.
Everyone can find me on Twitter at SmanSports and join in our conversations, ask us questions, do whatever you like on Twitter, basically.
Yep.
Just get involved.
So look for Matt with a T on Twitter there. Go and follow him if you haven't already. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher. Go ahead and leave a review. Thank you to everybody who's done that. It's been a fantastic amount of reviews coming in. I'm stoked, and I just keep them coming. I want as many reviews as possible to come in. So thank you for doing that, everybody. Don't forget, this podcast has been brought to you by Moneyball. So go ahead and sign up using the links in my Twitter profile. I think I've got the tweet pinned to the top of the board. So to check that out, there'll be links all over the place for it. So go and sign up to Moneyball and deposit using the code that I'm going to have linked out there. Hardwood Paroxysms NBA season preview is coming out. It might be out by the time you're listening to this, so make sure you check that out. I've got a couple of pieces in there. I think it costs $5, full of fantastic artwork and fantastic writing by some of the best basketball writers out there. You can go and check that out when it comes out. I said it should be in the next 24 hours that it's out, so I do encourage you go and have a look at the Hardwood Paroxysm season preview. And of course, check out Basketball Monster, where you can find all my work, the projections, the draft tracker, which will be invaluable as you head into your drafts over the next week or so. Matt, we're almost at NBA season. Are you pumped?
I am pumped, and I can't wait to take the money right out of your wallet on Moneyball.
Looking forward to it. Now, we're gonna close with a different track today, a new outro song, and it's by a listener of the podcast, his band, Steve Van Marnen. His band is called The Side Bets, and the song is called Haven't You Heard? So we're going to put that on in a sec. Matt, thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Josh. I will speak to you on Sunday morning.
Yes, so look forward to that big podcast coming. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.